Saturday morning was glorious for me. Woke up at 7:30, went and got a biscuit from Susan's Diner down the street and drank some coffee and watched Liverpool Newcastle. The rest of the morning, I was doing PA announcing for youth football. And I mean, it's pretty adorable, especially the, you know, the 5 and 6 year olds. They look like little bobbleheads out there. There was a literal slow motion tackle where one kid with the ball ran into another kid who just kind of hugged him, and the two of them just fell over sideways.
Nice.
So I heard a story of a game being played at a different location where one of these 5 or 6 year olds, basically when it's this young, you give the ball to the one fast kid who's not afraid of anything and just let him run for days while everyone else dodges him because they don't want to get run into. So the kid breaks a long one down the sideline, headed for the end zone. Sure, touchdown. You know, I'm sure grandma, grandpa, all the aunts and uncles, everyone there is real excited. And apparently one of the kids from the defensive team ran off the sideline and tackled him.
The kids, now, not the parent, right?
Right. So here's the thing with me, and this is just my experience dealing with youth sports parents, and what makes it all so frustrating to be involved in, is that story should be absolutely adorable. Like, the video goes on America's Funniest Home Videos, and we all have a laugh. Ha ha ha, these five-year-olds, they don't understand the game of football because they're five. But I can almost guarantee you that because that child's touchdown was taken away, which, here again, he's probably the fast kid who's going to have an opportunity to score like 17 touchdowns. I guarantee you those parents were expecting that kid to serve jail time.
Soccer chat with two T's, because we're going to chat about soccer, but we're also in Chattanooga. So it's like a play on words. And, you know, Chattanooga is a soccer city.
Welcome to episode 31 of Soccer Chat. Alex and Adam are here. We are ready to break down last week's heartbreaker with Lansing. Ended sadly for Chattanooga Red Wolves fans, but I think if you're just kind of a general soccer fan that thought, hey, what the heck, I'll watch this League One game, you came away with probably the match of the year. Probably the only one closer was the 3 goals in stoppage time between Lansing and Madison.
Yeah. I would say that one probably had a more, obviously it had a more exciting finish, but for overall game, I think this one was probably the better overall game.
So I want to break this down for the Red Wolves going from the back to the front.
Okay.
I will say it was kind of sad in the game where our offense finally seemed to come alive that Alex Mangels had probably his worst game of the year. He's been incredibly reliable for us, and then seeing him give up goals, and especially goals on shots from distance that we're used to him getting a touch to and pushing wide or making the save on, it was a tough night for Alex Mangels.
Yeah, there's a couple he took, just angles you don't usually see him take, that opened up way more of the net than he would normally do for those long shots. I'm thinking specifically of the one that went bottom right corner and he kind of stuck his left foot out for and just never had a shot at.
Right.
That seemed like a poor angle more than anything. And I think he just had an off game. And unfortunately, with our defense, he can't have an off game. There's a reason why he leads the league in saves, yet has given up a lot of goals, because that's what happens. Like, when you have a porous defense, you have to have a really strong keeper. And when he has an off night, it becomes really apparent. Now, that said, I don't know how off a night it is when you're talking about a team that has scored, you know, more goals than anybody over the past 5 games. So this is in the Lansing team, you're looking at a team that's known for its scoring and not for its defense. I think the surprising part was that we actually showed up to show the defense on Lansing was porous as well.
So moving up, you mentioned our back line giving up a lot. So I start on the right side. The only slack that I'll give Tony Walls is he was pushing forward and was actually effective in the offense getting into the attack. However, there were multiple times where you saw him lagging back on the counterattack and not getting back into position where he needed to be. I contrast that with the other side on the left, Timmy Mell. I don't know where he was. I never saw him in the attack, but I did see him in all sorts of terrible positions, leaving the center backs on an island.
So I don't know who our coach was, but I hold that as a coaching decision mistake. I don't get why he was playing left back when he has yet to have played on that side. He's either played right back or right center in the other games that he's played for us, and all of a sudden he's on the left side versus the top offensive team. Like, it just didn't make sense to me. Like, when I saw the lineup, I went, wait, what? Why is he over there? Like, you had both Zaguro and Caporelli, but you chose to not play either one in a position that they've played multiple games in versus versus an offense that you need to be confident in your positioning. That didn't make any sense to me. But, yeah, and I agree, he did seem out of place a lot, but I don't know that that's on him. I think that's more on either Hankinson from afar or Falvey's decision on setting up that lineup.
So going along with that, I have felt like through the year, Leo Fala has been one of the more reliable center backs. These last two matches that he's had, though, have been very difficult. He's been a little more shaky. I think he was lucky in this last game not to have either conceded a penalty or gone into the referee's book with a yellow card. I saw two or three different situations where either of those would have been appropriate. And we can thank the incompetence of League One referees that he never actually got called. I'm thinking of one specifically in the second half where he tripped on the infield sod and pushed down one of the Lansing players from behind. And I almost feel like the ref said, well, that was the turf.
I think that I think you're 100% right, because I actually rewound it, because I was watching this. We were gone all weekend, so I was watching this Sunday afternoon and I actually rewound. I was like, how's that not a penalty? How's that not at least a something? And we rewound it and looked at it again, and I think that's exactly what it was. I think the ref saw him trip on the are we calling it sod, or are we just calling it raised dead grass? But yeah, I agree with you to extent on that. The only part that I disagree with is I feel like he had a number of times where he did do a good job of matching up on a player on a pass. One of the things I think we dropped the ball on, and specifically it was dropped by Timmy Mail, is there was on Nick Moon's goal. Nick Moon passes the ball, and you're supposed to, when a guy goes into the box after passing it, it is just from like early on, you teach kids, you mark the man running into the box after a pass. The give and go, you shut that down. And
right.
He never stepped up, which gave Moon all the time in the world to take that hard strike. And if he had just been there, Moon would not have been able to turn and take the shot. While I feel like Leo had a few of those situations similar, where he was able to actually shut it down because he followed the man. So,
sure.
I think ultimately our backline and goalie, obviously, when you score three goals, that's who you're going to be looking at for a loss, right? I mean,
sure.
It's the highest scoring, most goals scored all year in League One. You score three goals, you expect to win majority of your matches. And it's not like I felt we got three lucky goals. And I think it's safe to say some of those goals were like the Zaguro goal out of nowhere, the amazing pass from Beatty, the great first touch from Hurst. Like, those are top-notch goals. But it wasn't like, it was just that. Like, we played a very strong offensive game all game long. And so the fact that we couldn't pair that with a strong defensive game was frustrating.
So let's move forward up the pitch, where we see, like you said, Greg Hurst, year one, who had talked about he was close to having a breakthrough, scores twice in this game. We score three goals. It's maybe the third or fourth time this season that we've scored that many goals in a match. Talk about the attacking performance, how you thought that went.
I think, obviously, it went well. But I think, for me, I felt like Cito, Beattie, and Hurst played off each other really well throughout the night. I mean, obviously, and you talked about Tony Walls kind of doing overlap. That goal that I referenced earlier that had the beautiful curving pass coming in from Beattie, that was started from Walls to Cito first with two good passes to get to even that back pass from Cito to Beattie to even get to that point. There was a connection that we've missed all year long, which is getting it from the defense and midfield to the forwards that we finally saw. Uh-huh. And I think that was, for me, that's huge, right? If that can be, if that's something that we bring to the table when we go up against the three worst teams in League One over the next 3 weeks, I feel pretty good about our chances. The question is, can we do that and match it with the defense that we've shown throughout the year, or do we have to have one or the other? The other part that I thought was interesting was I felt, and I need to look at the actual stats on this, but I felt like Wally was playing more aggressive than normal. I felt like he was going forward more than he normally does. And I don't know if it's just because it was an aggressive game or because their midfield also seemed like and the announcer kept talking about it, calling it a track meet. I don't know if that was part of it because there was no chance for it to slow down in the middle because no one was slowing down in the middle. But right. I felt he was more aggressive too. So I mean, you can't score three goals in the way that we did and have other opportunities that we missed on and not feel like we were being good on the, we were being a strong offensive team.
Yeah. I felt like I saw more out of Wally through this game. Connor Doyle was doing more of the tracking back. I felt he did a pretty good job defensively to offense moving up the field. So we went back to the 4-3-3 in this match, but we did see a lot more of an attacking presence and, you know, connecting those passes together through the middle that put them in some shooting situations, won corners and generally had the ball moving forward. And Lansing, you know, I want to say Lansing is a bad matchup for us, and I don't want to mean that as any kind of dig at Lansing, but it really is that Lansing's strength of we're going to get this ball and we're going to run at you hard. And when you get the ball, we're going to come at you and put pressure on you. That really plays into a lot of our weaknesses, and that once we got forward, it was tough for us to pull back and try to get everything settled after we got the goal and got the lead.
Do you think that is a speed issue, or do you think it's just a skill set issue? Like, is it just we don't have the speed to match up on those breakaways to catch up? Or do you think it's our skill sets don't play well to that, and we're more of a we match up better more in a possession spacing type thing?
I would say it's more about pace. We don't have players that are going to win the 40.
Yeah.
And so I think it really comes back to that, is that they just didn't quite have the pace to keep up with those guys. And they just had some trouble trying to slow them down when they got going, when Lansing got ahead of steam and was coming at them, bouncing those 1-2 passes and things. It made it a little more difficult, and they had to scramble more defensively.
So we've gone however many minutes in, 15 minutes in, 10 minutes in, whatever it is. We haven't talked about the other big part of what happened, in that when you talk about midfield and you talk about the our ability to kind of get it from one point to the next, that's Zaguro. Like, Zaguro is a key part to that. He's more of a defensive-minded player who we've been using on the left wing. He's been someone who will consistently dribble the ball forward, beat men off the ball. He's going to be our main guy taking corners, our main guy taking free kicks. And with 30 minutes to go, he loses his head. I've rewatched it. There's a bit of a little bit of a left-hand push from the other guy, but it's not enough to deserve what looked like a right-hand punch.
I wouldn't call it a punch. So
in real time, during the game, when you're watching it in real time, did it look like a punch to you?
No, I didn't. I didn't even really. I don't think it was on camera in real time at the beginning. I mean, they talk about there being a scuffle and they bring the camera back and everyone's getting separated. So, you know, the Lansing player is the one that escalated the situation. He got a yellow card. He deserved the yellow card for that. And I think Vangel Zaguro, he does get himself baited. And it's only because when he pushes the guy away, his hand gets up high around the chin area. But I don't think it was a punch. He was trying to push the guy back, you know, and he was trying to be a tough guy. And he was trying to, you know, bow his chest out and stand his ground. But I don't feel like he was throwing any kind of punch or anything at the Lansing player. The rule is once the hand goes up towards the face, it's an automatic red card. I think it's a legitimate red card that he earned. And I think he allowed himself to get baited in a situation where he didn't need to get baited and he should have just wandered away. He has kind of a knack for doing that through the season, we've noticed.
So
he's the guy that'll chase someone down when they pick up the ball and run off with it to try to get it back.
So I'm a huge fan of his. I do not. So someone on Twitter called him a dirty player. That's bullcrap. He's not a dirty player, but he is a hothead.
It was a hard foul.
Yeah, he definitely leaned into him with his shoulder down.
He went on his shoulder. He went through the middle of his back. The Lansing player hammed it up a little. I mean, he got fouled legitimately. It was a hard foul, but it's not like it was a dirty play where he tried to injure someone.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think of him as a dirty player. He's not. And he has, this is not the first time he's gotten into a bit of a scuffle. And when I say bit of a scuffle, I mean that chest-to-chest argument stuff right on the field. And for me, in real time, I immediately looked at April and said, well, there's a red card. We've lost him for this game and next. Like, immediately, because it went to the face. Rewatching it, I didn't think of it as much of a... I thought he punched in real time. But rewatching it, it looked more like it just happened to be perfect. Somebody's got it under his arm, which lifted his arm up. Like, I don't even think he was going towards the face. I think his arm got knocked up, and it just happened to hit the face.
Sure.
But... you put yourself in that position, and as integral as he had been to that entire game, he can't do that, right? It just can't be part of your game that you can allow people to get in your head, because a small league like this, they're going to pick up on that. Now, we don't have him for the Orlando game, but we still have Richmond and Toronto, and Richmond's got some of those players that can knows how to get under people's skin. Like, I've watched a lot of Richmond kicker games. They've got that ability, too. They've got some guys that will jaw at you. They've got some guys that will play, like, a rougher style. And we can't afford to lose him again. And I guarantee you he's back in. He's been too integral for him not to be.
Sure.
So
the good news is if they jaw at him, he's only going to understand about half of it.
That's true. The fact that he understands half of it's impressive, because I don't think he would have understood a lick of it at the beginning of the season. So
that's very true.
But, yeah, it's incredibly disappointing. That said, and I texted you this, I think that same result still would have happened with Zaguro on the field, because we don't traditionally do suddenly become better on defense at the end of games. We give up late goals. You look at the Orlando game, I could see it happening the same way here. That defensive lapse was a defensive lapse I've seen before at the end of the game.
Right. I feel like for about 34 of the 35 minutes that they had to hold that off, they did a pretty decent job and actually almost had a couple chances to move forward and try to score shorthanded. But I agree with you. I don't know that losing Vangel in at the time that we lost him had a huge effect on what was going to happen the rest of that game. With 11 players, I think it's still possible we give up another goal to the hottest team in the league.
Yeah. Now, that said, I do think losing Zaguro affected our ability to utilize the bench that was brought with us. And by that I mean, if Zaguro's still there, I think you would have seen Zide come on with about 15 to 20 minutes left. And I think he would have come on for Zaguro. Because I don't think with 10 men you can put one of the slowest people on the team out there and expect a good result. I don't think we can utilize those two young guys who, with 10 men, spacing and knowledge of where you are is massively important. I don't think you can afford to take a chance with the young guys. So I think we're kind of hamstrung on what we could do. What did you think on that?
I really feel like that situation screamed for Andrew Mullen to come off the bench as a defensive-minded midfielder. He could have played in the midfield. We could have gone to five at the back. His age and experience, they would have helped us more in that situation with 10 men. To me, I mean, Josue Soto is not necessarily a defensive midfielder, but you know what he is? He's fresh legs. You've been playing an end-to-end match that has six goals in it, and you're down to 10 guys. You've got half an hour that you've got to try to defend and hold on to a huge point on the road. I feel like Josue Soto, I feel like even trying to use someone like Eamon, even though he's incredibly slow, he's at least got enough tools in the toolbox that if he plays as a single striker up front, he's going to be able to track back some and help out. I feel like even if you were to put someone like Alexi Jimenez or Yaya Cissé on the field at that particular time, the fresh legs would have counterbalanced the fact that they were young. You would have maybe just told them to push up as the lone striker and give just a little bit of fresh legs. There's something that could have been done to go down to 10 men with 30 minutes left and walk off the field with two subs remaining. That just really bothered me. It didn't sit well at all.
So if you're bringing on Soto, who are you bringing him on for? Are you looking at Tanner Doyle? Are you looking at bringing him on for Sione and putting Hurst on top by himself?
Yeah, I would say that's possibly the case. For a while, you saw Hurst and Steven, like immediately after the red card, Steven Beattie was playing alone as the forward. And then eventually it looked like they switched and had Greg Hurst playing alone as the forward and Steven Beattie back in the midfield. So, yeah, you could bring Josue on for Cito, who is an older player who has a tremendous work rate, is constantly running.
Yeah.
Even you could bring him on for Greg Hurst. He's got two goals. That's fantastic. He's helped the team. Now we need to move into a more defensive mode. Here again, putting in Andrew Mullen for Greg Hurst and sinking him back would have been lovely, but Andrew Mullen wasn't there. So from what you had, yeah, I would say maybe Soto for Cito.
Yeah.
Or even for Steven Beattie, someone that can give fresh legs, that can sink back and play a little bit of defense.
So going into this game, you and I both kind of had the same feeling that we would love to walk away with a point, but we wouldn't be surprised if we walk away with nothing, right? That's kind of correct. Where we went into this. The rest of League One weekend, unlike the previous couple of weeks, went the exact opposite of what we would have liked to have seen. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
So we're in a situation now. Madison gets the 1-0 win in Richmond. We were really rooting for a Madison loss or at worst a tie. They've now got a three-point lead with three games to go. We play the three worst teams. They do play North Texas, Tucson, and Lansing.
Tucson on the road.
Right. But even losing the Tucson on the road, this is the point I'm going to make, and I want your idea on this. Say they lose to Tucson on the road. Do you think North Texans and Lansing, who literally have nothing left to play for, North Texas is number one seed no matter what. It would take a miracle for Greenville to catch Lansing. Do you think that they play their real lineups versus those teams? Like, do they go out there and put out a strong lineup, or do you think it's going to be that time of year gives them an advantage?
So I would say pride is going to cause Lansing Ignite to come out and play forward Madison. There's going to be traveling fans from Madison coming. It's going to be an electric atmosphere. Nate Miller doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to say, hey, let's just pack up and not worry about this game because we've already got the position that we want. There again, if they go for it and they lose, they're not losing anything because they've already pretty much assured themselves of that second spot. They still have a chance. Well,
no.
It'd be tough. I don't know that they're. I don't think they really actually can catch North Texas.
They can't. They both only got two games left, and they're behind by 8 points, so they cannot catch them.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So North Texas has clinched. They've won the regular season title already.
So anyway, I think Lansing plays that game against Madison. And as far as North Texas, I don't know where exactly they pull a ton of their bench from. I mean, are they going to all of a sudden sign their U-17s to professional contracts for one game against Madison? So you're gonna have the same high quality team, and being a two team who's trying to impress people in the building, I think they're going to come out and they're going to be looking to play. So it's not an easy road for Madison, and you know, they've beaten all of those teams before, I believe. I don't know what their record against Tucson is. So that, you know, that it's still going to take some work for us to catch them. But I think the road is a lot tougher for Madison than it is for Chattanooga.
Yeah, but the only thing is they've got those 3 points. So we need them to lose and tie or lose a second game. And that's what worries me a little bit about them. I'm actually more worried about them than I am about Tormenta, just because Tormenta plays at Lansing, at Toronto, and then home to Greenville. And I think that at Lansing, right, the next game at Lansing is a really tough chance for them. I think they lose that game, they're done. And so that's a big game for us. I think they could beat Toronto and Greenville. Once again, it's the last game of the season. It depends on what Greenville has to play for as to how much that team shows up. I mean, there is something to the fact that, you know, they even, a lot of people that are all pro-rel people, all this stuff, talk about when the game really has no meaning, it's sometimes hard for players to get up for it. And so that's what worries me, is more about the teams they're playing against don't have as much to play for as the teams that are on the field, possibly. So I don't know. We're obviously, I would have, if we had a point from that, just a point from it, I'd feel a lot more confident than I do.
No, I agree. We have absolutely zero margin for error. We have to get all of our points possible, and we still have other things that have to happen in our favor.
What's even crazier is Tucson, that they've got, you know, they just got lost to Greenville by 4, but they've got Richmond, they've got Greenville again, they've got Madison, and they've got North Texas, but technically they can still overtake us too. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I don't think we finish in the top 4. That's too many teams in Madison, Tormenta, and Tucson that can overtake us for me to feel confident. Even with us winning out, we need too much help, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot that has to happen, and it's tough. And really, you just got to take it one game at a time. Because
cliche machine.
If really? You look too far ahead, then you're going to stumble against Orlando, and then those last two games really aren't going to matter.
Stumble? We never stumble against Orlando. Oh, wait, no, that's all we do is stumble against Orlando. Never mind, my bad.
Pretty much.
Like, Orlando circled us in the corner like, hey, we can get another point in September.
So Alex's Stone Cold Prediction Machine has them at 4th place. But as we know, Alex's Stone Cold Prediction Machine has been wrong. So we'll just have to see where it goes. I know that these last 3 games are going to give me an ulcer. And if that's the case, then I really hope that for the next 3 weeks, I'm going to get some brisket nachos out of it.
Good point. So let's go ahead and preview this next game. You say we've got to take it a game at a time. Let's focus on Orlando. Vangel, obviously, is not going to be there. So let's start there. Let's assume Vangel was going to start if he hadn't got the red card. I think that's a safe assumption based off of how well he's played and his ridiculous goal that I'm still not sure wasn't a pass. Who's starting in place of him?
Jonathan Caparelli.
So you think Caparelli moves to left back? Because we don't have Meal anymore.
Right. Oh, darn.
Right.
Stop. Wait.
So
come back.
Caparelli goes to left back. Who's going in that top spot?
So what I hope to see is the 4-4-2.
Okay.
With Greg Hurst and Cito on the wings. Amonside, Stephen Beattie up front. The actual lineup, save for Jonathan Caparelli, I believe, in the place of Vangel Zaguro on the left on left defense and see that 4-4-2 go up against Orlando.
Wait. So I've got your top two is Cito and Beedy.
Amon and Beedy. Uh-huh. Cito, Wally, Connor, Greg Hurst.
Okay.
And then the back line, Tony, and you can take your pick from Andrew, Nico, and Leo in the center. Take two of those, put them in the center, and play Jonathan Caporelli on the left.
Okay.
Hey, what the heck? Let's give Will Dietrich a run. Will, you get to be goalkeeper today.
No, that's not happening.
Yeah, no, you can't bench Alex after that. He's had too much of a good season. You're not going to bench him after one game where he gives up. Yeah.
So I do want to bring up the bench, though, because I'm agreeing with you on that lineup, but I think we're going to see something new on the bench. And by new, I mean he's been missing most of the year. I think Richard Dixon's back on the bench for this game. What do you think?
I think that makes Alex almost as excited as when he sees Charlie's brisket.
Yeah, the reason I say that is if you're a stalker of their Instagram and other areas, he's in a lot of their videos and stuff doing like workouts that involve pushing against weights and some other stuff as well. I think he's been waiting for a clearance. My understanding is he was supposed to be going to see about getting that clearance either this week or last week. I don't think you would have taken him to travel for his first game on the bench. So even if he was cleared for this last week, I don't think he would have traveled anyways.
Right.
And I don't think you start him right away. But I would be shocked if he's cleared and he's not sitting on that bench. And I think I would love to see us go up 2 or 3 and give him a run out there in that right back position. And you know what else I'd like to see? I'd like to see Tony Walls be given a run in the middle when that happens. It's not going to happen, but I'd like to see it because when I see him in the midfield, when he's overlapping, he has a very good eye for how to set up a run. I'd like to see what would happen if we had gotten to experience what was possibly going to be our lineup all along.
That'll be very interesting. So given our performance against Orlando, given the stakes of this game as we're coming home, given our record against the bottom three teams of the league the entire season, do you see this as a possible trap game?
No. I don't see it as a trap game because this is not where I think if we had beaten Lansing, then I would be saying, yes, this could be a trap game. But because of the fact that this game matters as much as the next two would matter anyways, I think they're having the same mentality you are. We have to win all three. Let's focus on Orlando. And I think if they had won this game and we were sitting there in that tied position with the three lowest teams versus having to make up points with Madison, I could see us losing this game because of that or giving up 2 points and tying. But I think they're going to have a killer instinct in so much as they know that they've dropped points against Orlando. They're, I think, if I had to guess, they're slightly embarrassed by the fact that the worst team in the league has gotten the majority of their points from us. And I would be shocked if they don't go out there to prove a point.
Please do.
Yeah.
It's been a month since we've hosted a home game. I have a feeling the Scenic City Alphas are going to be ready to go off. People are going to would love to see a dominant performance, a 3-4-0 victory. 7 goals? Go ahead. Score 7 goals.
Okay.
Let's break the record. Let's score 8 all on our side.
So I do want to say, this. I wouldn't be surprised if that's not in the back of their mind that we should run the score up on this and try to hope that Madison gets North Texas to have one of those games versus them where they score 4 or 5 against a team and put someone away and flip the script on the goal differential. Like, I would not be surprised if Hankinson's like, we're going to get as many goals as possible and hope we flip the script on the goal differential. If that's not pedal to the metal, we're up 4-0, let's go score 2 more goals. Because ultimately, that's the only way we're going to catch them is if both things happen, right? I mean, I think we're down, 8 goals in goal differential? So,
yeah, it's actually 9 versus Madison.
Yeah. So that's kind of what has to happen. They have to lose a game. They have to lose and tie at best two of their games. It has to be either a tie and a loss have to exist in two of the three games. And if it ends up where they win both, that loss has to be a blowout and ours be a blowout win. That's the only way it happens.
All right. Well, let's go with what do you think is going to happen?
I think we win 4-0. That's my prediction.
I'm going to say 3.
Okay.
I'm going to say 3-0.
All right. I'm happy.
If they come out and play, if they come out and play the way the offense has played in these last two games, they should not have a problem putting away Orlando or Richmond or Toronto for that matter at home in that stadium that they know well. So I feel pretty confident that they can get the 9 points out of these remaining games.
Of those three games, Richmond worries me the most, but yeah, I would agree with you. Because Richmond's similar to us and very hot and cold. You don't really fully know which Richmond team you're going to get.
That's true.
So, all right, well, let's turn our attention to something a little less League One. Let's stick to our soccer chat name and chat about more than just Chattanooga soccer. You had mentioned that you wanted to talk a little bit about who you consider America's best 11 based off of. Are we basing this for 2022 or are we basing this off of right now?
I was looking more right now and I couldn't do it. I couldn't come up with 11 people.
that's not good.
So what tends to be the biggest problem is you look at the spine. I don't know who necessarily are like go-to center backs. If we had to play a for real, honest to goodness World Cup qualifier against Mexico in a game that we have, you know, for all the marbles, we want to put our best team out there. I don't know who we have in our center back. If the answer to the question is Jossie Zardes, then you're asking the wrong question. And yet he seems to be the only person capable of starting it forward for our team.
No, I would put Altidore up there before I put Zardes up there.
Well, is he going to be healthy? I mean, I would rate Altidore above Zardes, but he doesn't ever seem apparently able, healthy to play.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I would almost rather have an 80% Altidore than 100% Zardes. But maybe that's
very
me.
True.
So here's my issue is I think health comes into a lot of it, right? So like when I think of the back line, I also think like Yedlin. Like I think Yedlin brings an element that we don't ever get to see because he's always hurt during international breaks.
That's also true.
The other thing that worries me is I don't like the idea of a lot of people put Brooks as one of the center backs. And I don't like the idea of depending on Brooks as a center back. There's some worry there for me. Carter Vickers, do I start him there? Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, so here's my thing. There's not a starting 11 that if it was another top 20 country, the majority of which wouldn't be replaced by other players, right? Like, it's sure. Not like we gave this 11 to, you know, I'm not going to mention like France or Spain, like, or France or England, right? But like, or Mexico, I think, but even like if I'm giving this starting 11 to like, okay, that was sort of harsh. I almost said Uruguay. But like, I just can't, there's
Colombia.
No one on, yeah, like there's no one on here that I'm saying, all right, well, Chile. Like, is there anybody on here that I'm like, man, they take him in a heartbeat?
Right.
Like, the American likes to think Pulisic is there. He's not. We like to think that Timmy Way is going to be there. I don't know that he is. I've been impressed with McKinney, but I don't know that McKinney's starting for England. I don't know if he's on the bench for them.
Right.
And that's the problem is if we're wanting to be one of the top 16, round of 16 teams in the World Cup, we should have at least a couple players that we say every team would take them. At least like two. Give me two players that you would say, yes, England would take them, or Mexico would take them, or France would take that player to at least have on their bench. I got no one. And yep, that's my problem, is I can name all these players. I watch a lot of U.S. Men's National. I enjoy watching some of these guys play. I think Zach Steffen could very well be a top-level keeper in international play, but is playing at New York going to give him the experience he needs to actually develop into that? I don't know. Yeah. So I think that's another problem is, look where these guys are playing. Like, the ones that I think I'm most impressed by, they're not playing in MLS. The ones that are still playing in MLS, they're the ones that I'm saying no one else would take them. And so then that worries me is, can our best 11 get us past? I think we talked about the new setup of getting into the World Cup. I think that's a given at this point, the way it's built. Right? We're going into the World Cup. So the question is, can our best 11 get us to the round of 16? I don't think we're there. And that, to me, screams, we dropped the ball even further than we did by missing the World Cup, because we had a chance. We have a lot of young talent to build a roster that gets there, and we instead put frickin' Bullhalter in place, who barely led an MLS team, and we say, yeah, this is the guy we want running our program, and it took us forever to get there.
No, I would agree. And, I mean, as much as I love Altidor as our top striker, he's not the future. I am fully ready for Michael Bradley to pass the torch to whoever the next ball-winning defensive midfielder is going to be. I think it might be Will Trapp, and I'm okay with Will Trapp. I just don't see... It was too long to get started in trying to get this built. And I'm with you. I'm still on the fence as far as whether or not Berhalter is actually building it. And I'm afraid it's going to turn into one of those Tennessee situations where this next cycle we're going to be amazing.
Like only when we play UTC? Is that what we're going with there?
Right. Well, it's the we're always talking about just wait till this guy, you know, just wait till this recruiting class gets there. Then we're going to we just lost to Georgia State. Well, just wait till this next recruiting class. We've gone 5 years now and we haven't even competed against Alabama. And we talked about it last show, but you know, what's getting everyone's goat is, of course, Mexico is in a kind of a glut of talent, or they've got a generation that they're currently have that is very strong, and we're going to struggle against them for the next 3, 4, 5 years.
And some of our best players are leaving for there.
There you go.
So
some fun Premier League happenings this weekend. Hey, how did Arsenal do?
So is it that time?
A word in defense of making an ass of yourself. It's underrated.
So let me give you, before I go too far into this, what my weekend looked like. So there was a camping event all weekend long where we were in cabins that somehow were 20 degrees warmer than the 90 something degrees that was happening outside already. So you're going to sleep in like 100 degree cabins. Didn't get much sleep. It was a little bit cranky.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah, it was a little bit cranky. Sunday afternoon hits. My wife, I don't know if she just sensed my crankiness or what. She's like, I'll go pick up the dog. As long as you don't start watching the Red Wolves game yet. My son perks up and goes, oh, Dad and I will watch the Arsenal game. I'm like, sweet, we played Watford. This will put me in a good mood. Frickin' A, it didn't put me in a good mood. Are you kidding me? Watford? So my wife is gone to go get the dog. She calls me because she gets lost because the place, the kennel we use has moved. I'm on the phone with her. The first goal gets scored. I start screaming, goal! While I'm on the phone with her, I'm super excited. This is going exactly like I want. By the time she gets home, It's 2-2, and I am livid. I'm like, this is the equivalent of a freaking loss for us. And then I spend all day today reading quotes from guys like Xhaka who are saying they were scared of Watford when they scored two goals on them. Watford.
Hey, I haven't paid very close attention. How many wins does Watford have in the Premier League this season?
Zero. They had 1 point coming into the game.
Interesting. Interesting.
Watford.
Yeah. How many times has Watford won the Champions League?
Zero.
Interesting.
Also,
interesting. How many times have they won the FA Cup?
Yeah. Can we stop going down this road? How about we focus on the fact that they're like Auburn in football,
hey,
in the SEC?
Hey, name three people that play for Watford.
I can, but that's because they're all former Arsenal players. So here's the thing.
So you're saying the guys that your team turned down.
We turned them down because they were injury prone. None of them were in the game because they were all on injuries. But let's not focus on that. I'm exaggerating slightly, but yeah, they do have a player that honestly I like quite a bit, but he just can't stay healthy in Danny Welbeck, who unfortunately is injured again. I think he's got a lot of heart, but here's my thing about Watford. They annoy me almost as much as Auburn football does because they have a frickin' moose on their symbol, yet they're called the Hornets. It's like,
well, sure.
It's like Auburn. They're the Tigers, yet they yell War Eagle. Like, those two things about both those teams just infuriate me. So to tie, obviously the worst team in the Premier League this year, in my opinion, to give up an opportunity to move into a tie for second with Man City, these are the reasons why we don't make the top four. It's not losses to Liverpool and Man City throughout the year. We can lose all four of those games and we should still easily make the top four. It's ties to and dropping points to teams like Watford and Norwich City and those type of teams that come back to bite you from winning, if you're Man City, winning a championship, and if you're Arsenal, making the top four. That's what changes it. It was despicable, it was disgusting, it was useless, and it was incredibly infuriating. On top of that, they put out the team that I wanted to see in having Ozil in the lineup again, and he was a disappointment. Overall, just an ugly, frustrating game. I'm still waiting on Pepe to score. He keeps showing me signs of it. It just hasn't happened. I expect him to take off. I'm still very happy with him. It's very similar to what I said about Greg Hurst. Like, I feel like he's on the precipice of getting there. He's just not there yet, but you can see glimpses of it. But man, I'm ready to start seeing it because putting him and Aubameyang had a great game. Putting those two together will create a lot for us. But when you're literally passing them the ball to give them a goal, you're not going to win. It was very, very frustrating. That's all I got.
I hope you enjoy Frankfurt on Thursday.
Sure. Bring up the NIT. Thanks.
That's all I have.
All right, well, we do want to thank our sponsor, Roughneck Scars, the official scarf supplier to MLS, USL, and US Soccer. Get custom scars for your group or team at roughneckscars.com. We once again want to thank you guys for listening to us complain about sports, and we really want to see you out on Saturday. It's our first game back in 4 weeks, so come out and see us, hang out with us, say hi, say you listen to the show. It'd mean a lot to us. Thanks.
Bye. So we played yesterday, my son with his travel team. We went down to Birmingham, Alabama, and played some friendlies. Fun fact about Alabama, did you know that the toothbrush was invented in Alabama? If it had been invented anywhere else, it would be called a teeth brush.
Well done, dad joke machine. Well done indeed.
Did you hear about the tornado in Alabama? It knocked the governor's mansion right off its wheels.